Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to that Chelsea podcast, where Chelsea have drawn 2-2 at one of the worst teams in Premier League history. Yeah. Join me to look back at a truly abysmal evening in Sheffield. It's Miss Jessica Flotter. Jess, I'm not going to even ask how you're doing, so just tell people where they can find you and all your stuff, because I'm sure you're not in the best of moods.
Yeah, I mean, I could be better, but at least my Brazilian team, right? We won yesterday, so we can say we're champions of our state. So that's enough to get me going at least. But yeah, people can find me at @je_frota on Twitter, and always open to chat anything related to Chelsea or the Premier League. And yeah.
Lovely, lovely stuff. Jess's links will be in the description below. Right. Yeah, Sheffield United 2, Chelsea 2. Chelsea failed to beat 20th place Sheffield United. They failed to beat probably statistically one of the worst Premier League teams in history. A team that had conceded 80 goals before today and had only scored 28. Jess, a team that we looked absolutely devoid of ideas going forward against and just got bullied and outplayed, I think, for a fair chunk of the game. Just that was just truly, truly abysmal.
Yeah, it's one of those games where you just say, you know, it's indefensible. It was poor from beginning to end. And once again, we get that early lead and we just we stopped playing. And we couldn't beat Hanman Burley, and we couldn't beat Sheffield United. And it's just, you know, I was looking at it. We got an XG of 0.44. And as you mentioned, just in the Premier League, before this game, Sheffield had like 80 goals scored against them. And you look at I'm not one to just stay with stats and say that stats are everything. But there's, you know, they completely translate what was the game for me. We just looked lackluster. As you mentioned, without ideas, it was just, there was no urgency, and, you know, you just needed something more. And it was awful that the moment that Cole Palmer went off, and I immediately thought, okay, if they equalize now, then it's going to end in a draw or we're going to lose, because I couldn't look, you know, I was just looking at everyone else, and I couldn't find anyone that could add that spark or could give us a single moment of brilliance. And it's so weird, because even Cole, I mean, he looked so tired, so exhausted, and he was still the only person that I looked at and say, okay, at least we can find something through him. And he wasn't even in his good position. You know, he was wasted throughout the whole game, basically, you know, playing centrally. But, you know, it's also, I think it's a bad thing that I don't feel angry, because at least when you're angry, it's like you weren't expecting something, something annoyed you and you get that emotion. And right now I just, it's almost like I was expecting it. And I think that it's even worse. It's not indifference per se, but it's just, it's so bad that we are expecting it to continue to be bad or worse. And it just, it's almost like it doesn't get me, because we need things to change in terms of the hierarchy. And if they don't, then results like these are going to keep happening. It, you know, it's just what it is.
Yeah. Now, I said on previous pod, I said there's no way Chelsea will get 6 points from six in these next two games post Man United. But I did think three of those points we would get would be today at Sheffield United. And I thought we'll concede some nonsense to Sean Dyche's Everton, because they will bombard us with set pieces, and we will see. But yeah, it happened today, and Chelsea blew a great opportunity to, you know, put themselves in an even stronger position for European qualification. Jess, I guess let's just get into it. I mean, look, Chelsea get off to a fairly decent start. 11th minute, Thiago Silva heads home from a corner. They're returning Thiago Silva, and at this point, Jess, I'm thinking, okay, this is, you know, this is just the nice start that Chelsea needed. You know, we don't actually know how, I guess, easy it will be to break down Sheffield United. You know, you thought, but, you know, this is a nice early goal. Hopefully Chelsea could come there. They didn't. But just, yeah, Thiago Silva came back into the starting lineup today. Just thoughts, I guess, on his performance. I thought he was fairly, like, solid. He obviously had that one shaky moment where he made a pass back and there was no one there, and it sort of led to a chance. But he got that goal from a corner, and I thought he was decent today. I just think, you know, it's just a shame that really, you know, still defensively, we are just still poor. And I don't, you know, I basically just think says I don't think there is necessarily any correct solution or player personnel to actually fix Chelsea's defensive issues. I think that probably just became more clear on today's showing, didn't it? But just thoughts on Thiago's performance in his return.
I think Thiago showed today, at least for me, that he is not the solution for our defense, but he is also not the problem. Because for the longest time, you know, people went on him, you know, saying that he was the villain, he was abysmal, he was a terrible defender, and he was the reason we were conceding so much, and that we looked poor because he didn't have the pace anymore and all of that. And then he went out of our defense and we continued to be shaky at the back, conceding at least two goals every match. And then he came, you know, with him today, he looked all right. As you mentioned, he had one very, very bad moment. He also got his goal, but he was not at fault for any of Sheffield United's goals, in my opinion. So to me, he showed that he still can contribute and that he's not that abysmal defender that people sometimes want him to be. But he obviously is not the center back that we once knew, obviously with the age and the lack of pace. And you want, you know, in the Premier League, someone that can have those sort of qualities. But at the same time, you look at the bench and you have Badia Ashil, who's not performing. You have Disasi, who is not performing to the standard that we want him to be, and Levi is injured and Wesley Fofana is injured. So again, I think it's fair when people criticize him or say that he can't be looked at as the long-term solution, or that, you know, he can't be seen as an unchallenged starter. All of that is completely fair, but I think it's very, very unfair to say that he is the worst player that we have, or that he is the reason that we can't play out from the back, or that he is the reason that we are conceding so many goals. And so, you know, as you said, he is decent, but having him back also does not solve our issues defensively. So it's kind of more of the same, currently at least. So I guess it's about who we have available in the moment. And honestly, based on what we are seeing from Badia Ashil, we talked about him a little bit before recording this. He was one of my favorite players when he came in. He was having incredible performances, very, very solid, good in the air. But after his injury, I don't know if it's necessarily just something to do with his mentality or the pressure, whatever, you know, happened to him psychologically. But since his big injury, he's just has been very, very poor. So if you say, do you prefer to play De Sassi and Badia Shield or De Sassi and Thiago? Right now, I'm choosing Thiago 100% based on what they're offering at the moment in time. And that, to me, is a worry, because 99% chance that, not to say 100, but possibly even 100% chance that Thiago will leave at the end of the season. And so we have, you know, center backs on very long-term contracts, and neither one is playing to the level that we would expect for Chelsea. So that, to me, is a worry. And there are multiple reasons why that is happening in terms of lack of structure, you know, and how the team is set up. And that goes back to the manager. But also, there are so many individual errors that I think part of the problem is the lack of structure. But at the same time, is it a confidence thing? There are just so many questions at the moment in time. Is it that, you know, we can't seem to find a pair that complements each other very well? And obviously, having Levi injured, to me, just makes it a lot harder. But yeah, there's just a lot of question marks right now regarding our defense.
And just, I guess, another question mark that maybe is starting to arise again in weeks and the recent weeks is that in our goalkeeper situation, Jadon Bogle equalises for Sheffield United. And Jess, I think, I mean, it's just so poor. There's no excuse for a goalkeeper to get beaten at his near post, in my opinion. And it's, you know, it's, what is it? I guess Bogle is sort of like a cross, you know, Petrić, I think, maybe thinks he's going to for the crossing. But just to get beaten from that position, that angle, it was just a really, really poor goal to concede. And I guess it just sort of, I guess, kind of sums up the current sort of Chelsea. But now even Petrović, who, you know, we have, I guess, sung his praises at points since his coming into the team. But also just kind of showing that perhaps he, you know, rightly so, he isn't, you know, the solution. He is just simply, at this probably moment in time, just a better choice than Robert Sanchez, which kind of just says it all. And then again, sums up Chelsea's recruitment policy that they've used, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think it goes back to the sporting director that you said, and in terms of how Chelsea move in the market, because you have, in theory, what's supposed to be an experienced goalkeeper in Sanchez. And then that allows you to bring in someone that's not as experienced to be his number two, but who has a lot of potential, who is playing very well. And it's the result of good scouting. But then again, the experienced goalkeeper that you go for is the third choice goalkeeper of Brighton, who is not having a very good moment. And then obviously he comes in, he makes a lot of mistakes. That opens up the door for your number two to then, you know, go to number one immediately, you know, making a huge jump from the MLS to the Premier League. And I think he did fairly well. He did very, very well in the beginning. And that's also a worry for me, because right now I think it's his third game in a row where he made some sort of silly mistake or had a moment of, I don't know, like looked unfocused or something in the last three games. And what exactly happened for him to start so well to then have this deep in form? You go back to, is it confidence, or was it just that the beginning of his tenure with Chelsea was like a purple patch and the jump was actually too high for him to make at this moment in time? And then it begs the question, well, will Chelsea be looking at a goalkeeper again in the future? What's the reasoning here? Do we have to stick with the two goalkeepers that we have? And you have Kepa coming back. And so I think, yes, it was a bad moment from Petrović, but to me, it just makes me look at the sporting directors more than the individuals, because I just don't think that they made the best choices when it comes to that position. Especially when you see that there were a lot of really good goalkeepers, experienced goalkeepers that were available for a reasonable fee. And then, you know, they go for this, for the two that we have right now, and neither of them seems to be the unbelievable top goalkeeper that you need at a top club, right? You need a goalkeeper that's able to save you points. I will say, though, that Petrović had, towards the ending of the game, a huge save when it was still 2-1. And so if we're not for the defensive shakiness of our center backs, and particularly Benoit Badiashile at the last moment, then we might get a win today. And I would give it to Petrovic a huge amount of praise because of that save that he had. It was so important. So, you know, it's just right now I'm getting the sense of, okay, he's good. He's still young. He can, but maybe he's not that top goalkeeper that we needed.
Yeah, well, Jess, if we say did the thing that a lot of people wanted to do and was sack these sporting directors, and Jess, let's just say hypothetically that Chelsea come to you for your services. Who would be a goalkeeper that you would quite like Chelsea to go after? I've got a feeling he might be a goalkeeper that England fans would have seen some of during the international break when England played Brazil. But Jess, just you sort of mentioned there's some more other options out there for Chelsea that could have gone to in the summer. But if you were sporting director, and as I think the kind of general consensus is that Chelsea probably do maybe need to address that keeper situation, who would you bring in?
I would like to leave it on record that while you're asking me that question, you keep smiling because you know 100%, actually, I would say 101% who I'm going to mention. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of Bento from Brazil. He plays for Atlético Paranaense. We've talked about him before in the pod. Chelsea have scouted him before. He is the one that I really wanted us to go for. He had a chance to play for Brazil. You know, start for Brazil with both Edison and Alisson out. I think he reminds me so much of Alisson before he went to Roma. So I just think he's absolutely incredible keeper. He would be the one that I would be looking towards. But there are a couple of goalkeepers as well in Ligue 1 that have been very impressive. I will say that I don't watch a lot of Ligue 1. So it's not, when I talk about like players from Ligue 1, it's not me watching them. It's based on things that I read and also from people that I really trust that watch this league, like Seb or obviously Sam, Central CFC on Twitter. So I follow up on a few players based on who they tell me to. So I'm keeping an eye on a couple of goalkeepers from that league. So, you know, there are players that are gettable. I think some will mention Maignan from Milan, but I don't think he's available at all. So that's why I'm not even considering him. But yeah, I have this question of whether or not Chelsea are moving for a goalkeeper because Ben Jacobs said that that's not on the list for Chelsea and Fabrizio as well recently. So we have to see what's going to happen in the summer. But yeah, I would be over the moon. I even tweeted that if Chelsea get Bento, I will have my first goalkeeper match jersey. Yeah, so I'm definitely keeping that promise up. If he by a miracle ends up at Chelsea, I will say that chances are that he will likely move to Inter Milan from Italy because they seem to be the one the club pushing for him the hardest. So, but we'll see. Here's hoping. I will not give up until he has signed for his new club.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to move the game on. It's 1-1. And Jess, Chelsea do then retake the lead. Noni Madueke scored it. It meant that he, being assisted by Cole Palmer, is the 14th time Chelsea have had a Premier League goal, both scored and assisted by players aged 22 or younger this season. Only Leeds in the 1999-2000 season with 20 have had more such goals in a campaign in the competition. It meant Cole Palmer's assist also meant he became the first Chelsea player to be directly involved in 25-plus goals in a single Premier League season since Eden Hazard, who got 31 in 2018-19. And only three players have been directly involved in 25-plus Premier League goals this season. Cole Palmer with 25, Mohamed Salah with 26, and Ollie Watkins with 28. Obviously, Jess, I think we'd also maybe Nonny sort of threatened to do that moments earlier where he threatened to cut in and he just got his shot wrong. Just have to say, you know, I think more credit goes to Nonny for the goal than Cole for the pass, but it's obviously nice for Cole to get another assist. But just actually was really, you know, nice from Nonny, sort of cuts in and then just, yeah, sends the keeper the wrong way very much. I mean, Gerbich looked very stupid when you see the goal back and see him just go the other way. But yeah, Jess was just nice. Nonny comes in for a start. Obviously, he had that impact off the bench Thursday night against Manchester United. And yeah, Jess, that was just like a really nice finish for Nonny, wasn't it? Just a nice goal.
Yeah, it was a really, really nice goal. And it was actually kind of like out of nowhere because Chelsea looked so flat And actually, Chelsea looked very, very flat and slow throughout the whole game. I think today, just sideways passing, like we had the whole time in the world and that we could score at any time. And it was just, as I said before, just lackluster. So to me, that's what I mean when I say it was like out of nowhere. It was like a moment, a glimpse. And it was a really, really nice shot from and movement from Nani. I will say the problem with Nani for me was I don't think he had a particularly good first half. I think he was quite poor in the first half, but so were a lot of other players that we had on the pitch. And the main problem for Nani for me is actually Cole Palmer, because Cole's best position is in the right wing, even though he got the assist today. He just looks like he can impact the game a lot more in the right wing. And it just feels like he's wasted centrally based on the games that he had there. So for me, if you have to say, oh, we have to play Cole centrally to allow Nani to play, then Nani is staying on the bench to me. And it sucks, but that's how it is. I do understand, however, Nani starting today. And this is one that I actually feel for the manager, because we have Mudrik on the left and then Nani on the right, and both can be useful and have been useful as subs and manage to find a good goal or an assist or play well when coming on later, and then they get to start the next game and then they are very poor. So I think that's what happened last game. Mudrik started, he wasn't great, and then Nani got to play as a sub and he played a lot better, so he got the start in the next game. But as I said, the problem with Nani is that he plays on the right and Cole has to start on the right for me. So it's just I would keep him as a sub for that reason alone. Or if, and I think that was the case, if Cole was really, really tired, maybe you start with Carney, you try to do something. But you know, keeping Cole out of his preferred position is a big no-no for me. He should be the first name on our lineup, and he should be the first one in his preferred position, because you don't change on a, you know, it's a saying we have in Brazil, by the way, não se mexe em time que está ganhando, which means you don't mess or you don't change things when you're talking about a team that's winning, and the team in that case is Cole. So you don't mess with him. He gets everything to perform to the best of his ability, and then you see what you can do with everyone else. Even maybe trying Nani on the other side, you know, on the left wing, but you don't change Cole. That's at least for me.
Yeah. And just obviously 74th minute, Cole Palmer gets subbed off for Carney Chukwuemeka. Interesting. We'll get on to subs and Poch a bit later in listener questions. Maybe a result also of a heavy challenge he faced earlier on in the game, which, you know, potentially red card worthy, depending on people's view on it. And yeah, Jess, with 2-1 up, and we try to see the game out. So he obviously takes Kukurel off, brings Badiashile on, just, I guess, for the height, just more height on that pitch. And Jess, Chelsea, you know, well, as history has told us in the last month or so, that Chelsea concede 2 goals a game, and we hadn't conceded 2 goals in this game. So we probably, you know, maybe sensed that it was coming. And Jess, in injury time, Ollie McBurnie heads home, and Jess, it's just another calamitous goal where, you know, clear a ball, it gets recycled back in, and Benoit Badiashile just decides to absolutely stand there and just not react and just allow McBurnie so to be played on, and he can just go on and finish, and it's 2-2. And as I said, it's 93rd minute, there's no time left for Chelsea to get a winner. Sheffield United are not going to set up like Manchester United did midweek. They are not going to necessarily go and go for it again and try and get another winner. Like, they're gonna sell that point. And just, it was just a thoroughly disastrous end to a disappointing, a very, very disappointing evening. But again, was absolutely thoroughly, thoroughly deserved, because Sheffield United against us had more shots on target and had more touches in the opposition box than us. And they said registered 1.36 XG to our 0.37, had double the amount of shots and had double our amount of shots on target. I mean, they get their just reward, but just an absolutely embarrassing way for Chelsea to throw away 3 points.
Yeah, but as you said, it was a fair result. We deserve that result. And then it comes to the question of the in-game management of the manager, because I think the first problem here, it was how late he made the subs, We hadn't, you know, people say, oh, we controlled the game. We didn't control anything. We were the worst side. We had, if by control you mean we kept the ball maybe a period of time, sure. But that led to nothing. Like we had less shots and we had less shots on target and we weren't incisive at all. And so I think the majority of Chelsea fans were like, where are the subs? Because we looked tired, we looked disconnected, we needed fresh legs, we needed that injection of something new. And it took us too long to have that. I understood Arnie coming on for Cole because Cole did look tired, but that's a big move. Like that's on the manager. Like when you decide to take the only player that has been impacting game after game, then you have to be sure, and it needs to pay out. It needs to pay off, because if it doesn't, that's on you. And so after the first half, I was asking for Nani to come off and then to have Cole play on the right and maybe Carney on the left, or trying maybe Mudryk centrally with, for Connor or something to change, and just allowing Cole to play on the right. Obviously we didn't see that. And because when Carney came in, then you had Cole taken off. And like, as I said, I understand that because he was tired, but at the same time, maybe having them both on the pitch could lead us to more, because Cole felt isolated at times, that he had, in terms of like, he almost had no one to play with him in terms of 1-2. And I think Carnes could do that, but it is what it is. And in terms of Badiashile, for me, the timing was a little bit weird, because we had I think we had a free kick for us when he decided to make that change. So the timing of it for me was weird, but I also can't say that I didn't understand the idea behind bringing Badiashile, because obviously, Sheffield United are good with headers and set pieces. And you had Kuku, who on the other hand is not. So you were trying to, bring in reinforcements, and he brought on two of them with Kasere and Badiashile. So it was kind of unfortunate in the end that the equalizer came from kind of a set piece, and Badiashile did poorly, because that was just reinforced by the manager. So I can't hold that particular goal on the manager, because he actually foresaw that happening and tried to correct it. But I think I can blame the manager. I don't even like the term blame, but I can blame the manager for his in-game management throughout the game. The fact that our XG was so low, the fact that we didn't create enough, the fact that we looked so lackluster, and the fact that this keeps happening again and again, where we have a good result and we have a chance to move up the table and maybe really push for European spots, and maybe even for the sixth spot on the table. And then just everything, it's on a silver platter for us, and we just don't take it. And this kept happening and keeps happening again and again this season. And for that, you can blame the manager, and I do blame him for that. And it's just, it feels like it's almost a repeat of last season, where there's just this disconnect where the manager is to blame, but it's not just the manager. There are players in the squad that are questionable decisions from the transfer people. And you look at the squad and you still see, after spending so much money, you still see positions that need reinforcements. Left back, it's a position that every time that we play, it becomes clearer and clearer that we need someone there, because Chilly hasn't been the same after his injury. He's not the same from 2021, from that UCL run. He hasn't really been performing this season. Kuku, he has obvious limitations. Let's put it like that. Even though I think he is a very nice guy who gives it all, his all, he has very, very glaring technical limitations, and we need someone there. We obviously need a striker. Now it appears that we might need a goalkeeper. And so, looking back to the amount that we spend, and you look at the options that we have, or that the manager had, and it's just not good enough. So I'm just basically saying there that a lot need to change. for us to actually be in the place that we want to be. Just to sum up, I don't think the manager is the biggest issue, but I do think he is an issue at this moment in time, just because, sure, he can't control everything, but he needs to be able to control that. That's what's within his reach, you know, control his controllables. And the in-game management is within his reach. He needs to be able to control that. He needs to be able to adjust. And after that first half, to just wait until after, I think it was 65 minutes, 70 minutes, to make a change, for me, it's just indefensible.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I think, honestly, for the second match out of the last three, I reckon the obvious sub is there. Sub Connor off at halftime, bring Carney on, play him centrally. But no, yeah, I'll be honest. As long as this won't happen, so it's kind of pointless. But if the sporting directors were to go, I would be happy to say goodbye to Mauricio Pochettino. I am running out of patience with him, because I think we've got worse. I think we've played well for the majority of the game once since that Carabao Cup final, that 3-2 win against Newcastle. Since then, there's obviously that opening 30 minutes Thursday night against Manchester United, but what happened after that was an absolute mess. We've had a decent first half against Leicester before we capitulated and then sort of rescued it again. We had a decent first half against Leeds, which we then sort of rescued a little bit. We had a decent first half against Brentford and then capitulated and then sort of had to try and rescue it a little bit. And while Chelsea is still picking up points and actually find themselves in probably the best league position they've been in ages, they find themselves also really doing their best to throw away the chance of Europe that keeps getting presented to them. And I think it's absolutely unforgivable to concede 4 goals in the space of a week to 19th place Burnley and 20th place Sheffield United and just fail to beat them. I said, in this last 8 days, Chelsea have taken 5 points out of a possible 9. Really, that should have been 9, but that also very easily could have been 2 or 3. And that kind of just sums it up where Chelsea, and I said, those 5 points from the last 3 games have been enough to move Chelsea up on the table, such as the inconsistency of the likes of Brighton, Wolves, Newcastle and West Ham. And it means that Chelsea is still, you know, in the hunt. I said, Chelsea can still go level on points with Newcastle, albeit of a worse goal difference, if they win their game in hand. They can go above West Ham if they win both their games in hand. But again, it was an opportunity as well, beating Manchester United midweek again. And with Manchester United dropping points again, if Chelsea won today, they could have been 3 points behind Man United with a game in hand and a better goal difference. And I just think this Chelsea team is not sustainable to keep conceding 2 goals a game. You're not going to get anywhere. And that shows absolutely no sign of going away. I said, in an attacking sense, that's the worst we've looked in months under Pochettino, which is also quite worrying. Like, generally, I've been relatively happy with how we've attacked. But as I said, just mentioned, we created nothing at the XG. Shows that we made Sheffield United, as I said, one of the worst Premier League defences in history. As I said, they could break Swindon's record, one of the arguably worst teams in Premier League history, and we made them look good. And there's no excuses for Chelsea, yeah. Regardless of the people, regardless of the players he's got, regardless of the players recruited, for Chelsea to only get 2 points from 19th place Burnley and 20th place Sheffield United, who don't score goals, by the way, and who have managed to score twice against us in these 2 games. There is nothing defendable about what we have seen from Mauricio Pochettino in this last week. He has had 30 good minutes of play against Manchester United, after which we capitulated and we got away with one. Those 90 seconds against Manchester United at the end of our game have saved him and prevented this from being a very, very different conversation this week. It's already quite a negative one, but it would have been beyond toxic had those last 19 seconds against Manchester United not happened. And this Chelsea team keep getting opportunities presented their way. And yes, obviously, the players need to do better. And like Jess says, I do not put this all on Mauricio Pochettino, but he is doing nothing to show me any confidence that he is the right man to take Chelsea Football Club forward. Because again, for the second game in a row, I see a game with absolutely, I have no idea what Chelsea are trying to do. I have no clue what the structure is. Again, we are unable to control a game, which we should be able to do against lesser opponents. There is no progress with Mauricio Pochettino as Chelsea head coach. And while I do not think Chelsea's problems get solved if Mauricio Pochettino goes, because I think the problems go up higher than him, I also am really, really losing confidence that he is the man to turn Chelsea around, because I see no progress. I see a team that concedes goals, and I see a manager devoid of ideas at points. Yeah, I think the best thing to do for Chelsea Football Club, and this will not happen, is to say to the sporting directors, yeah, your vanity project, your little, you know, your GCSE, your A-level type vanity project or whatever, your dissertation has not worked. You know, this plan of bringing in all these young players and throwing them in together and expect, you know, to help Chelsea get Champions League, which, you know, was the aim for this club, and to suddenly get a form of Europe, it has not worked. They go, because that has not helped Mauricio Pochettino, but he is also, but he should be doing better with this squad that he has at his disposal. I'm sorry, he should be. He is, I mean, as I said, I dread to think where Mauricio Pochettino would be without Cole Palmer this season, which is damning in itself. As I said, Chelsea, I think the best thing to do at the end of the season, part ways Mauricio Pochettino. Thank you, you tried your best. It's not worked out. The sporting directors need to go as well, because until those sporting directors go, nothing will change. Chelsea will still probably sign a bunch of kids, and then the next manager, they'll be thrust upon the next manager, and it'll be tough for them. But nothing's going to change. This is not improving. Chelsea are getting worse. And I say this as someone who tries to look at the situation positively and who tries to always see the good in things. But I've looked at Chelsea since that Carabao Cup final, and they are getting worse. They have just managed to somehow get some results in some of these games, and has also been helped by playing some lesser opposition. But as I said, they are not getting the points required in these games against lesser opposition. He is not the guy. And as I said, if Chelsea do not get any form of Europe next season, then there is no reason to continue on with Mauricio Pochettino, because he will have ultimately failed in the task that was assigned to him. And it, let's be honest, it was achievable. It is a very, very achievable task. Looking at the teams that are above us, Manchester United in sixth are very gettable. So are West Ham in seventh. So are Newcastle in eighth. This is not an arduous task we are now asking him to achieve. It is something that is gettable and does not even probably require a mental points tally to get form of Europe. But yet again, Chelsea are making it harder and harder for themselves, and Pochettino is not helping himself. And again today, you sub Cole Palmer off. Sure, he might be tired, but you was basically like conceding that, yeah, we're going to now probably just try and maybe see this game out, and, you know, just maybe if we can get another goal, great. But to me, that was a moment you sub your best player off, Cole Palmer, and you say, it's kind of admitting, but right, we've got two goals. We're going to back ourselves now to see this out. And again, those subs said, bring Kaste on and Badiashile for the high. It did not work out. He was not able to see it through. And I'm sorry, there is no excuse for you not to beat 19th place Burnley and 20th place Sheffield United in the Premier League season. I said, these have been two of our last three games. I said, yeah, we'll go on to the list of questions, yeah, etc. for and wrong. But as I said, I think it's just, my faith and my belief in Mauricio Pochettino is waning week by week now. I said, Manchester United was abysmal. Manchester United gave me no confidence in him. He just got away with one, and I love the passion he showed it full time, and credit to him. And I, you know, that was genuine. That wasn't him acting up. That was him relieved, etc. But I just look at us, and I just do not see a team that is very well coached at the moment. And again, just an absolute, yeah, it just looks like a mess. And again, I'm going into games thinking Chelsea need to score three goals to win this game, which is not good enough. And it shouldn't be my mindset going into a game against Burnley and Sheffield United. And yes, these players need to step up. Yes, they need to do better, but they need to be set up better as well, because the amount of chances we give up and the amount of opposition shots we've let on goal in these last few games have been an absolute joke. Jess, I will let you say before we move on to listener questions.
Yeah, I think you can, you know, as a fan, you need to look at the situation and realize that two things can be true at the same time, because I can see that, you know, Pochettino or Pochettino, depending on how you say his name, from Brazil or England, he hasn't been dealt the easiest of hands, right? He has a lot of, you know, young players, players that maybe are not mature enough to compete at the highest level, you know, to be fully mismatched together, squad that still has holes in certain positions and all of that. You can recognize that. But at the same time, there are things that you can't really justify. I mentioned before, and I will say it again, he needs to control his controllable, and he needs to do better with the things that he can control. I was reading a quote from him today saying that he is still trying to learn about the profiles of the players that he does have. And to me, that's just ridiculous. Maybe it would be something that he could use to say, or he could use that an excuse if it was in the preseason, in the first months, but not now. You know, you're learning about the profiles of the players that you do have. Surely not. Surely you know already the players that you can count on and how to utilize your players in the best way. Because, for instance, Cole, everyone, and I mean everyone, can see that he is at his best on the right. So what about your learning profiles of your players? You know, that sort of thing, it's just, you know, it doesn't compute with me. And at the same time, he had Lewis Hall, he had Ian Madsen. Left back is a position that we are struggling to find the best possible choice. And it was his decision to let them go, particularly with Ian Madsen, because obviously he felt that he wasn't physically fit enough or high enough or whatever it was. But he needs to own up to those sort of decisions. You know, he could have kept Andre, for instance, to rotate with Caicedo and with Enzo, because he is the one player that we have that can fill both positions and can help rest both players. And instead, he went with, you know, keeping Ugochukwu because of his height, and then running basically Caicedo and Enzo to the ground. And then same with Casade. He was having a good loan. He was starting to play week in and week out. And then he brought him back to not play him. You know, those are decisions. And I know some of those decisions are not solely on him, but surely he has his part on that. And also, as I said, in-game management, you know, taking too long to make subs. And, you know, it's just, there are certain things that you can't justify. Losing, you know, not winning against 10 men Burnley, and now today against Sheffield, it's just, and it's not, as you said before, it's not even not losing. It's just the way that we perform, because we deserved to lose both games, if we're honest. And so he needs some sort of accountability there. So that can be true. And at the same time, you can look at the sporting directors and say that perhaps they are the biggest issue here, because I think that maybe a new manager can get more out of the crop of players that we do have. I believe that. But I also believe, depending on the manager, we might get worse. And so I'm a little bit scared about maybe sacking the manager that we have now, and then having the sporting directors choose his replacement. So, I mean, I don't have confidence that they can choose the right option for us. And at the same time, this strategy, you know, it's not working. We need maturity. We need experience. And I don't mean older players, but we need players that have been fighting for titles, players that can contribute now and not just potential. And we also need to make better choices in terms of our loans. You know, what's going to happen with Andre? What's going to happen with Omari, who's having a very nice season in the championship? So what's the choice that, you know, there are just so many questions right now in terms of how our squad needs to look like. And I do concede that there are some positives in what the manager has achieved. For instance, I think that unlike previous managers that we had, the players seem to really back him and seem to really fight for him still. And that, to me, is a positive. And just the it seems like everybody is still together. And I know some people say, oh, this is just a passion merchant and whatever. No, I think that's actually very important, even more so when you're talking about a young squad. But unfortunately, it can't end there. We need more than that. And in terms of the sporting directors, I think they are very good, or at least they brought names that are very good in terms of talent or in terms of potential. But that's the thing. It's almost like they are, it's one thing to scout talent, and it's another thing to be able to build a cohesive squad. You know, you can't be buying too many players that are alike, and you need to consider a lot more in terms of aspect and circumstances of certain players. They need to match well together, and that's not happening right now with our squad. So in my opinion, both things can be true. And the fact that both things, in my opinion, are true is what makes me fearful in terms of our future. Because you sack Pochettino, and then who do you get? Who are they going after? Because let's be honest, they're not going after managers like Antonio Conte. They're not. They're not going after big name managers. They're not going after managers that, one, have some sort of experience with young squad, and two, will accept to work under the conditions that they offer, which are right now a lot of young, inexperienced players. So what manager potentially are we getting? I can think of maybe like someone like Slot from Pinewood or something like that, but are we really going to be better with managers like that? Or it, I don't know. I really, really don't know. And that's what makes me fearful.
Yeah. No, as I said, I think Poch, if me, you know, winning, say, the problem with Poch is very much on the condition that the sporting directors do go with him. I think that is, you know, absolutely essential. Because I said, otherwise, I said, they'll be in charge of bringing the next coach in. I think, you know, it's very much the same. As I said, I don't think the problem just improves with a manager. But I said, I am, you know, I'm really struggling, you know, and don't really have much belief that Poch, I said, is the guy. Because again, Chelsea, you know, post that Carabao Cup final, conceded twice against Leeds, conceded twice against Brentford, conceded twice against Newcastle, conceded twice against Leicester, conceded twice against Burnley, conceded three times against Man United, conceded twice again today against Sheffield United. They said that's seven games in a row where Chelsea conceded two or more goals in all competitions. And the calibre of those teams we're playing, that should not be happening. So, no, it is just really, really poor from Chelsea. And they said the amount of leads as well that Chelsea have thrown away in that time as well, all those games at various, for one point or another, Chelsea have been leading in. And they said we are now starting to pay the price as well. So, yeah.
Just one thing that I will say, I'm sorry to interrupt you. It's one thing that people just say, oh, it's so easy, you know, bringing in a new manager and everything is going to be solved because look at Aston Villa and look at Emery. And I agree with that to a certain extent, because at the same time, if you follow, you know, fans from Aston Villa and even like Matt Law, the whole transfer idea, for the club shifted once they went for Emery. He has a big say in who they sign and on the type of players that they target. It, you know, this massive shift happened, and that's not going to happen for us, let's be honest. So, you know, finding a manager that can improve us as a team and that can lead us to a better path, and at the same time maintain the sort of strategy that we are seeing right now, it's just, I'm going to say, incredibly difficult, if not impossible.
Yeah. No, that's it. You know, I do not have faith that, you know, the next appointment, you know, on the sporting, if the sporting directors remain in place, that they'll get, you know, I have no faith in them for the next appointment. We'll just be wait and see. As I said, the only reason why Poch becomes desirable for me to stay is because I simply, you know, don't know who else would they replace me with. Would you necessarily, do you trust them to get better than Poch? It's just a horrible situation we're in, where I do not think Poch is good enough. But is he better than what you can maybe, is sticking with him better than what you could get? But also, I still don't see progress in this team. And I do see Chelsea getting worse in the last month or so. So it's a horrible, horrible situation. But anyway, that's a lot of manager chat. And we will move on to some listener questions. First question comes in from Jam. I've got other head loss. What went wrong today? I mean, Jeff, for me, it's everything. I just think, you know, you just don't tell me. I think it's just so frustrating that the reaction, but Chelsea go 1-0 up, and there's just not this team. And we saw it against Burnley. This weird, almost refusal to go for the game and go for the juggernaut and just go for the kill early on. Because this team, like, they can't defend Leeds. They can't really defend. So then they almost wait to be punished, to concede, to then almost have to go again in games. It's this bizarre way we play. But just, I just think, honestly, everything. And that's everything, because I don't think any one player really walks away from that game saying they played well today. I said Cole Palmer had one of his quiet games. I think that's kind of what happens when you waste him centrally. Connor, you know, huffed and puffed as he did. He obviously gets the assist for Thiago Silva's corner, but again, this is not a game for Conor Gallagher. I think this said the belated use of substitutes was really baffling. As I said, I think that game at 1-0 at halftime, again, why don't you make the proactive sub then and seize the initiative? But no, there's no reaction. And then, you know, I guess luckily for Poch, we ourselves, you know, the players themselves managed to get themselves 2-1 up. But yeah, Jess, I mean, honestly, just everything, like everything, just the way the goals, again, just the manner of the goals, just like the inability to control games, just everything. There was nothing, again, really likable about that performance. At least Man United, we could say we had a good first 30 minutes. Like, there was nothing probably similar to Burnley in a way, but maybe less so. just nothing really likable about today from a Chelsea point of view.
Yeah, I mean, Jam is my friend, as you know, so I know he won't be angry at me for answering his question with another question, and a very succinct one at best. He asked what went wrong, and my answer to that is what went right. I don't think anything went right, so.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Fair enough. Dean Miz, is it time to say goodbye to our top four dreams? Oh, Dean, you optimist, you. Yeah, I mean, yeah, we were never in the hunt for top four, let's be serious, people. But it is just, well, I'll kind of move on. For the question for Europe, it is just what makes it so frustrating. Because if Chelsea, as they should have done, and I know we can take the United result almost as a bonus given the crazy nature of it. But if Chelsea had done what they should have done and beaten Burnley and Sheffield United, and you add that to the Man United result, just they'd be on 48 points from 30 games. They would find themselves in seventh place, which would be at worst a Europa Conference League spot and potentially Europa League qualification spot. They would also have games in hand on teams above them and would have a genuine, like, decent fist of making sixth. Yes, it's what's so frustrating about this team that we're sort of in this perennial, like, just constant state of, like, the opportunity to escape from 10th is there. And we've escaped it this weekend, and we escaped it this weekend before we even played, just due to some other results. But there seems to be this opportunity for Chelsea just to move up the table quite often this season, and they just refuse to take it. It's just such an incredibly frustrating experience, isn't it, Jess? Especially when kind of the manner way which happens is just so repeatable. It is kind of just like it's like it's been Groundhog Day for a while now. And I know you kind of said you were sort of, you know, I guess kind of used to it now, which is why you're not as angry about today. But Jess, it is such quite a tiring and just draining experience, isn't it? Just when, you know, there's reason to be optimistic and there's reasons to hopefully try and build on something. It's just a flash in the pan, and it's, you know, one step forward, two steps back, which is what it's felt for so long, hasn't it?
Exactly. I mean, you look at the table, and that's what's infuriating. You look at the table even now, and you look at it, you know, it's very reachable, right? It's still very reachable. So the reason for us to be optimistic is the table, is the fact that it is mathematically possible. And if you look at the fixtures, you know, from the clubs around us and the fixtures that Chelsea do have, it is reachable. We can do it. But then that's the optimistic. But then you go to the pessimistic side, and it's just the way that we have been playing, the inconsistency. And even when we get the wins, is always chaotic, right? So we won against Manchester United through chaos, basically. So, you know, we know that we always are expecting to concede, and we have to score more than two goals to get a win. And so it's like, it's so close, but it's still so far away. And I guess that's what makes it so infuriating and frustrating, as you said.
I genuinely don't know the last relatively comfortable, stress-free game that Chelsea had in the Premier League. Maybe, and I'm thinking this, I'm honestly go back to maybe the 1-0 win against Fulham in January. And even then, the ending of that game was a little bit iffy. But I said, the Palace away win was not, that was two late goals to win that. Said Brentford was a 2-2 draw. The Newcastle win, maybe for periods, was that, because I think that was a good performance. But obviously Chelsea had to concede a late goal to make themselves nervous. But maybe Newcastle in March. But genuinely, like, there's other games, there's just no semblance of being relatively at all, by any shape or form, a comfortable watch. And yeah, I said, it's just frustrating. Chelsea don't really, they just provide chaos. And the chaos is fun when you come up on the positive side of it, but it's not at all sustainable. Nothing we have watched from Chelsea for the last month or two is in any way, shape or form sustainable and is any way really leading to anything. And it kind of shows by the fact that Chelsea is still themselves stuck in ninth. Yeah, I said, it's just so frustrating because you don't want yourself to get sucked into believing they can get Europe, we can get you, but then you get a result and some other results go your way and you get sucked back in. It's just an incredibly tiring experience on this roller coaster. And yeah, just want to get off. And thankfully, there's only 8 games left this season. Next question comes in from JL. What are your thoughts on Jackson? He seemed to be settling in, but since his trick goal against Newcastle, he slipped back. And again, today messed up at a crucial time when he could have killed the game for us. Yeah, Jess, Nicholas Jackson, he obviously had that run where he went, you know, 4-4 in terms of goal contributions. But as I said, these last, you know, 3 games, Burnley, Manchester United and Sheffield United, has, you know, not really been involved in the game as much, you know, decision making points just a bit frustrating. It's just sort of almost been sort of, yeah, just a slight regression. But just thoughts on Nico. I mean, I don't really know genuinely these last few games actually how much service he's got, how much real, you know, how many opportunities he's really got. It just feels like it's one of those games. He sort of felt a passenger in a lot of these games. And I'm not necessarily sure that's all his fault, but I do also, you know, at times his decision-making, et cetera, has maybe been a bit iffy. I don't know. It's his debut season. I'm sure he's not been as impactful, and it's easy for people who have doubts on him and are not really building him to kind of get on his case. And I'm not saying that's what JL is doing here. But yeah, maybe he's just sort of suffering the consequences from the fact that of Chelsea's, you know, the way that Chelsea are not really able to control games, and they're not really able to really give him the time or opportunities to really, you know, succeed. He's, you know, as I said, Chelsea games in the last three have just been pure chaos, and it's quite hard, you know, really for it, you know, for any real structure, any sort of semblance or anything, yeah, productive or feel sort to really take place. But just thought I may be making a, you know, massive excuses in defense for Jackson, but yeah, he's not been great.
I don't think
about what I've seen the last three.
Yeah, no, I don't think you are being making excuses or anything. I think he is unfairly criticized a lot. Is he perfect? No. But as you mentioned, I mean, he is young. He is having his first full season in the Premier League. He is having his first full season, or should be having his first full season as a striker, even though today he played more on the left. I think his numbers are good. They're actually quite good. And if you compare to what Kai had for Chelsea, you know, at striker, you know, he has really good numbers. There are questions, I think, in terms of his decision making and in terms of his ability to just maybe settle down a little bit more and keep the ball a little bit more. But I quite like him. I think he is a good player. I think today, even though he was kind of like a ghost in certain periods of the game, for Nani's goal, our second goal, maybe just look at him and how he is always making the right runs. So yeah, I think he can improve, but I tend not to go too hard on him because, okay, let's give an example. If you look at Manchester United and you look at Holgen, and if you look at Kai Havertz on Arsenal, both are, you know, getting a lot of praise for things that, in my opinion, Nico does and is doing a lot better than either of them. So it's almost like it feels like maybe we expect too much of a player that, as I said, is too young and is having his first Premier League season. And if I were to point out a problem or the biggest problem at Chelsea that needs fixing in terms of our squad, I wouldn't point him out. I wouldn't single him out. And I don't think he is the reason that we are not winning games or that we are not impacting games. As you said, I think he needs a little bit more service, even though I agree that he needs to be more polished. But yeah, I just don't think he is the problem with our attack. I think he is mobile. I think he knows how to read I think he connects really well with Mudrik and with Cole Palmer. I think he knows how to read where the pass is going to go. So yeah, I have a really good feeling about his future. Actually, I do believe that we need to buy another striker, someone with a lot more experience and all of that, and maybe not have Nico leading the line and being the only one and demanding numbers of him or whatever not. But if you just look at his stats, he's having a very, very decent first season, so full season. I think we may have to look at wingers a little bit more in terms of what they are not producing this season when compared to Nico Jackson, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. No, and I also will say on Nico, he's literally got no one else to take the burden of him in that position up top. Bro, you went on loan, and we saw when Nico was away at AFCON, you know, how that the gap that his absence left. And said, you know, I've said it before in this podcast, but I'll say again, Tammy Abraham in 1920 had a great season, and it's viewed very fondly, but also it's also viewed quite fondly by some people, including myself, the fact that Olivier Giroud was able to come in and help him, and he'll help Chelsea achieve an objective in getting Champions League qualification, as I said, because, you know, Tammy Abraham needed some time out of the team as well, needed Ollie to help him out, and Nico's got no one in that position to help him out. So yeah, not great today. been pretty quiet and a bit frustrating for the last three games. But, you know, he's a young player. And I think already Chelsea, and, you know, again, without people trying to get on my back, I think Chelsea are asking, have asked already, expected and maybe asked far too much of Jackson this season. And I think maybe, yeah, people probably are like, he shouldn't have been, Chelsea shouldn't have been having to be as reliant on him this season as they have been. And again, that's an issue that goes links back to the people upstairs. But Jess, what did you want to say before we move on?
Yeah, I was just saying that we decided to go for him to be our main striker after he had only a few months at that position on his previous club, because he was always a left winger. So you bring in someone that hardly has an experience at the position to be the main striker at Chelsea Football Club, and then you expect him to perform to Haaland's level. It's not going to happen, right? So that's why I tend to be a little bit more patient with him.
Next two questions I will kind of combine. Colm asks, what do you think about central midfielders not dominated a team that are all but relegated? Is it systematic, or have we a pair that cannot play together? And then Jonah asks, does Enzo do enough to impact matches? I guess, Jess, well, you know, I guess you can maybe mention Enzo sort of, and his impact sort of in relation to, I guess, Colm's question. We can, you know, answer both questions there. But what do you kind of think of our central midfield, you know, again, not being able to dominate a team but are all but relegated? Is it systemic? Do we have a pair that cannot play together? Is it thoughts? Again, is it just simply, you know, Poch isn't getting enough out of, you know, a midfield pairing that you think a lot of coaches would probably want to work with? Is it, you know, they two, what is it, set up, they not well suited to playing together? What are your thoughts?
I completely disagree that they cannot play together or that they are not a good pair together. I have watched Enzo actually a lot closer because I've watched him since he was back in Argentina. But if you look at just looking at Europe, if you look at who Enzo had around him at Benfica and who Caicedo had around him, Brighton, and then you look at the qualities and the characteristics of both of them, to say that they cannot make a really good pair, to me, it's just too much. And people can say, oh, they lack height, and that is correct, but you can address that in other areas, not necessarily with having those two. But then you look at the trio of Khan, Enzo, and Moy, and sometimes it kind of misses a few things depending on the opposition that you're facing. So, for instance, I agree with you. I'm not sure I would have started with Khan. I think maybe starting with either Mudrik at the 10 or maybe Karnes would be a better fit for what we needed in this game. But we have seen the three of them really, you know, do really well together when we are playing up against, for instance, Manchester City, and you just have Connor really high up with his press alongside Cole Palmer. So it's about, for me, reading the opposition and adjusting your midfield and actually your entire lineup to exploit their weaknesses and obviously protect your weaknesses. And I'm not sure that we did that well today, but I really dislike this idea that we threw money away or that they are not good enough. I am very, very comfortable in saying that I think Enzo is an unbelievable player. I really, really do think he is an unbelievable player. And if you pair him up with a striker like, for instance, Osi from Napoli, obviously, Osimhen, and then having some sort of more solidity in terms of how you defend, then he's going to be pinging those long balls and passes throughout the entire match. He has an unbelievable vision and he's technically brilliant. I think he's really, really good. And with Caicedo, although I do think that the fee was a lot steep, because of the, I don't think it's not that I don't think he is worth the money, is I think that he is not at the stage of his development.
That price tag. Like, yeah, his performances are never going to justify that price tag, really.
Yeah.
He's on the high to nothing there. But people should be able to kind of judge him just on his performances and kind of try and ignore the price tag, which again, I mean, is quite 100%. Tough to do for people.
And I think today he was single-handedly kind of dealing with our whole midfield. He was our whole midfield today. I don't think Enzo had a really good game. I don't think Connor had a really good game. And I think Moy was, Mrs. Caicedo was dealing with everything on his own, and I think he did have a really, really nice game, in my opinion. So it comes, I think, to me at least, much more about how we set up structurally and how we read the opposition. And it also comes about having the players that, you know, you look at Moises Kean and Enzo, they're playing week in, week out. They're playing 90 minutes. Not only are they starting, they're pretty much starting and ending every match, right? So for me, that also comes back to squad building and why don't you kept someone like Andre to rotate, who has qualities of both these players to help them with the load. Because I mean, I know people say, oh, we're just playing once a week and whatnot, but nobody really knows the toll that, you know, playing 90 minutes every week, and particularly the month of March where you had, you know, games midweek, have on players and young players. So yeah, I definitely think that they can work together. When people say that we should be looking to add another midfielder in, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, because I need to see how Lavia does, because obviously we didn't really see him play for Chelsea, but we can't forget that we have him. We can't forget that we have Andre, and we can't forget that we have players like Casare as well. And we have a lot of players in the academy. So I would just really like to properly use what we have, because we haven't been properly using what we have at Chelsea, and then decide whether or not we need to go after another midfielder. But it's not a position that I'm concerned about in terms of talent or in terms of the profile. I don't think that we are necessarily missing a profile of a certain midfielder. I would look a lot more at left back, maybe center back, depending on Wesley Fofana. I would maybe consider looking at a midfielder if, you know, Lavia is completely out of the question for next season or something like that. That I don't think it's the case, right? So, and there's one thing to be hopeful about. If, you know, we got Cole Palmer, our best player from Manchester City, from Joe Shields, and he was the one pushing for Lavia, right? So here's hoping that when he does play for us, he has a similar impact.
Yeah, but as I said, look, with Lavia as well, obviously, I think part of also one of the reasons he was also bought is we know that Moises and Enzo go away to international duty, and their national team coaches don't really give a toss, understandably, about the club football. They, you know, they're playing a lot of minutes there and a lot of travel there, and they get back quite late again. So, yeah, they are probably played, again, more than that we would have ideally wanted them to play this season. Not really trying to make an excuse for them, but just giving some context and some mitigation for also maybe why at times people aren't really impressed with midfield. I think, you know, again, they also on a bit of a hide into nothing. And again, maybe that's, you know, giving a bit of leeway to Poch as well, the fact that he's not had Lavia. But again, as said, you know, there are options. And again, I just raise you the point of Liverpool. Again, the players that Klopp has sort of trusted when they've had their injury crisis to go in. And then I guess just for Jonah's question, does Enzo do enough to impact matches? Because I guess he is quite an interesting figure. He obviously started his Chelsea career when Chelsea were strong quite well. You know, we kind of see under Potter and I guess under Lampard as well, that they were involved like a lot. He would get like a lot of touches of a ball, etc. Obviously, at points, there's been a lot of, you know, Poch's use of him has kind of been like a main talking point this season. Again, do you also think that, you know, Enzo's performances have dropped off, but also maybe Poch isn't getting the best out of him as well? Would it kind of be fair that, you know, Enzo and Poch probably both share some blame in that situation? It's not just one or the other.
Yeah, I think so. I think he, you know, we saw the impact that he could have under, you know, under Potter. So we kind of expect it, but the structure is different. The way that we play is different. Particularly in the beginning, he was just so high up the pitch, and we talked about that, and it was absolutely the wrong position for him to be in. So now we are seeing him play a little bit deeper, collecting the ball more. So I think there was an improvement in how Enzo played under the current manager. I think he can still deliver more, and he will deliver more. I have no doubt. I really, really, people might call me crazy or something, but I have no doubts about Enzo. He is an absolutely phenomenal player. But I think he needs to be doing more. But at the same time, I look at certain games and I just see him really dictating the way that we play, picking the passes and trying to read, and he always looks for the forward pass and for the different pass, and And I think he really plays well alongside Cole. I'm loving watching them together. So I'm gonna be really, really kind of annoying here and say, yes, he definitely can do more. But I think today, I'm not gonna even talk about today because I think no one played well today, in my opinion. Not a single player played well today, not even Cole. So I'm not gonna talk about today, but I have been seeing an improvement in terms of how he positions himself on the pitch, because in the beginning, as I said, he was very, very high up, and then he completely stopped making runs through the box. And right now I feel like he's almost reaching that balance of maybe understanding Moises Caicedo a little bit more as well, to know when he needs to make that run and when he needs to stay a little bit deeper. But I also think that, even not talking about his technical ability and all of that, his character is something that I think we desperately need for this side. He's just someone that doesn't hide away. You know, he's just passionate, and he likes to fight for his club and for the badge, and he doesn't shy away from challenges or anything like that, or for, you know, in terms of a pressure situation. I usually remember, people will remember, obviously, his confrontation with Mason Mount against when we play against United, but also when that first time that Sterling tried to take the penalty away from Cole Palmer, and Enzo was the one to go there and to say no. You know, Cole is going to take that penalty. And when Sterling finally, on another game, was able to do that and take the pen, Enzo wasn't playing, and we didn't really have anyone to go up and have that role. So I think he can contribute a lot. He is the type of character that I like. And what I like about, I know I'm just praising him a lot, but I do like this. There are certain players that they immediately get what it means to be Chelsea. It's kind of weird. I think Thiago was one. From the moment that he understood what it meant to be Chelsea. And I think Enzo is another one. From the minute he started playing for Chelsea, it felt like he had been playing for Chelsea for a long time, if that makes sense. So I just like that. And I honestly, I have no doubts about it. I really have no doubts about Enzo Fernandez.
Fair enough. Fair enough. The cynic in me would say that that opportunity against Mason Mount was a perfect opportunity to kind of just improve his overall feeling and reputation with Chelsea fans, given Mason's current feeling among a lot of Chelsea players. But no, I do get it. And Enzo's passion and certainly one of the things. And look, I don't really necessarily think it's fake. I also think, let's be honest, players, you know, they can get you and they can love your club while they're here. And then when a better opportunity comes along, also might be off. And then people might go, well, you know. How genuine was it? But no, in one point, yes, I get your point. And I do, you know, Enzo, yeah, as I said, it's one of those. I don't look at Enzo Fernandez and I go, you are a worry in this team. Like, I do not look at you going, you are, I just look at you going, it's frustrating, but we're probably not seeing the best of you yet. But again, I just, yeah, I do kind of just hope and, you know, out trying to make excuses. I said this midfield too, I do quite like, they are frustrating at times. They were up, obviously, poor games at times. But I just do think if you give them proper structure and they have some actual a proper if they can have a settled back line behind them as well, because again it's another Chelsea lineup with another change to that defence. If Chelsea can eventually like get a defence that can stay fit and they could have a settled back line, then you know things could just be you know things could be great. I you know just imagine, and I know we're never going to achieve these levels again, but just imagine if you had Enzo Fernandez and Caicedo playing in front of, you know, reached prime, re your Reece James from, say, pre, you know, getting all those injuries and Chile pre those injuries and, you know, a centre back pairing, you know, potentially Levi if he, you know, can just sort of, you know, stay fit and get consistent. Maybe a Fofana, etc. If, you know, because we're never going to go back to having a Thiago Silva, what we first did. But yeah, as I said, they're not perfect. They frustrate points. But yeah, I don't, you know, I don't necessarily look at them today and just go, as I said, it's hard to really blame like an individual's or individual's day because I don't think anyone was really, really great today. But yeah, hopefully we kind of answered all your questions there. And those are all the questions that we got sent in. It was an incredibly frustrating day as Chelsea again took two steps forward, two steps back in the last week or so. And at these, yeah, while the league position has improved since we last spoke on this podcast on Thursday, it is one of a sense of just regret and a feeling of a missed opportunity, and yeah, a very frustrating existence. But that's going to wrap it up. So before we go, I'll get just to give ourselves one last plug, just tell people where they can find you and all your stuff.
Yeah, I'm on X or Twitter at Je underline Frota, and I'm always open to talk anything Chelsea, to discuss points, and I always try to be polite. And yeah, it would be fun to talk with you if we haven't met yet. So feel free to give a follow and to tweet me something or to send a DM. I'm always open to chat. And I also wanted to thank Nick again, as always, for the opportunity to talk about the club that we all love. Even though it's been a frustrating day, it's always nice to discuss and to think back about, you know, our squad and what we need to do for the future and what needs to change. It kind of always opens my mind, and I always, you know, in talking and listening to what you have to say and the questions and all of that, you kind of have a feel of, well, maybe am I being too unfair? Am I being, you know, thoughts that you have in your head, and sometimes you see other fans feeling the same way, and sometimes you feel them feeling completely a different way, and it's so nice to have that balance and to try to be objective, even though it is such a subjective sport in terms of emotions. But when you're analyzing it, to try to be objective and try to take a step back and analyze the whole picture and with context and all of that. So it's always nice, and I think it's a great opportunity to be here with you. So thank you for that.
Yes, it's always a pleasure. As for us, we're on Twitter or X at Chelsea Pod. We're on Instagram at Chelsea Pod. We're on all your usual podcast platform providers, Apple, Spotify, Google, etc. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please feel free to leave a rating and review whenever I tweet, but put out any likes or reposts. Go a long way to help get it on to other people's times. At the end of the day, we are just Chelsea fans talking about the one club we love. And yeah, they are chaotic experience at the moment, and they are incredibly, incredibly frustrating. God knows what's going to happen between now and the end of the season. Buckle up, folks, though, because it's going to be a bumpy ride, that's for sure. Sean Dyche's Everton will be next, and we will be back then to look back on a game where Chelsea will probably be bombarded with set pieces and probably struggle to deal with them. And it's just a question of how many goals we concede and do we score more than Everton. I mean, that's kind of the basis of most games of football, to be fair. But yeah, until the next episode, everybody keep the blue flag flying high.
Honestly, what is wrong with them? Two goals conceded a game for like a month now. It's ridiculous. Are they doing anything about the defence? Doesn't look like it. It's embarrassing now. It's beyond boring. Got to get off this roller coaster. It's got to be a turning point where they actually build on a result. Even my dog's pissed off. Can't blame them. Sports Social Podcast Network.